Today is June 1st, 2015, and my name is Deborah Schwartz, and I'm sitting here with Jill Young, longtime Mill Valley residents. Jill, thank you so much for giving the Mill Valley Historical Society your time and to share with us.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so let's just get a little background information to begin with, where you were born, a little bit about your education, and what brought you to the Bay Area.
Well, I was born in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada, cold, frozen north, right where Sault Ste. Marie is at the junction of Lake Superior and Lake Huron. It's a wilderness nearby, a steel plant there. It's, what do they say, hard scrabble community, steel town, surrounded by beautiful lakes. So growing up, spent time in canoes and rowboats and had a lot of independence. It was very beautiful. Very different than Mill Valley, because there the trees were almost like kindling compared to redwood, so it had a different kind of desolate wilderness beauty. So it was a very nice place to grow up. I chose to go to college. I chose my college by a place that would be on water, so I chose Queen's University in Kingston on Lake Ontario. And then my parents decided to move to British Columbia, so I moved to University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I graduated from there, met my husband there in the dining hall, and we returned to Ontario, but the call of BC was very strong, so we moved back to Vancouver. And at that time he was given a job offer with the YMCA Building Services of San Francisco. And so we moved down in 1968, lived on a houseboat in Sausalito, loved it, didn't want to leave, but we were adopting our son, and the adoption people were not excited about raising a baby on the water. So we got a home in Mill Valley.
And where was your first home?
It was up on Douglas Drive, up on near Panoramic,
mm-hmm.
And then later we were fortunate to get a piece of property on Oakdale Avenue, and we built a home there in 1975,
mm-hmm.
And that's worked out very well, walking distance to town, which is always a privilege in Mill Valley,
mm-hmm.
So that's how we came to be here. We've traveled overseas from time to time. My husband worked with Bechtel, and he's an architect, so we did live in Saudi Arabia and China, Hong Kong, and so on. So we spent periods away, but always came back.
And what did you study in school?
I started out as a high school teacher of history and English,
mm-hmm.
And those were my majors.
Mm-hmm. And did you play sports when you were in college?
Not in college. I played a lot of sports in high school because you probably know Canadians are very interested in hockey, and we skated a lot, and I played girls' ice hockey and miraculously still have all my teeth. My father didn't mind that I played hockey, but he worried the whole time about my teeth.
Well, you have really pretty teeth, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. So he was relieved when I stopped doing that. But I played basketball, volleyball, and some track and field. I enjoyed group sports very much, team sports. I was always kind of maybe in the top third. You know, never the star, but always the participant, and good enough to be chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun, always fun.
So what was it like coming from a colder climate to Marin County, living in Mill Valley, still a natural area, but...
Well, we had a transition with British Columbia on, mm-hmm. the coast, which is milder, and I took to it immediately. And I used to say, oh, I love the change of seasons, but I can't say I've ever missed winter for one day, driving in snow and all of that. And when we came to San Francisco, to us, it felt a lot like Vancouver, because in Vancouver you have the ocean, the water, Snow Peak Mountains there, but here we have Mount Tam, And I just fell in love with that and the hiking. And my favorite trails are the Nora up to West Point Inn. I thought that was magical.
Going Matt Davis to Nora to West Point Inn.
Yes, yeah, that's my favorite.
So have you spent a lot of time in outdoor activities here in
Yes,
Wynn?
a lot of hiking. Probably the sports have not done kind things to my knees, so I don't hike as nearly as much as I used to. So I miss that. But I've always felt this was just the most amazing town. So beautiful.
And so, what was it like for you in the 70s, when you arrived here?
It was quite an exciting time. There was a lot going on, obviously. We came in 68, so there were peace marches and anti-Vietnam War involvement. So all of that was going on. There was, when we came, the Flower Children were here
In Mill Valley.
everywhere, pretty much everywhere. So that, and we were on the houseboats for a while in Sausalito. So that
Did you know Alan Watts and Ginsberg and all
did
those?
not kn knew of them, didn't meet them, but that all of that was part of that period. And I was looking around for things to do. I had a couple of young children in the 70s, and I saw this. My neighbor said, "Would you like to come and learn to play soccer?" This fellow, David Frommer, has soccer classes. We just kick around a ball around over at Cocky Park. It's really good exercise and it's fun. And I had really, for me, soccer was what people did at the park in Canada, people that I didn't know from foreign countries. And while we were picnicking, they were always kicking a ball around, and I never paid any attention. I don't know why. It was just that's something other people do. Canadians at that point didn't do that. And I realized, oh, this is what they were doing, and no, it's so wonderful. And I missed it. So here was, I went out and over to Hockey Park, and they're mostly moms. Kids were in nursery school, and I was totally hooked. I thought, this is fantastic. The setup of soccer is a lot like hockey. You have forwards and defenders and a goalie and offsides. So I had a picture of it in my mind from hockey. So that made it the transition a little easier. And we got some of us got to wanting to have more competition, not just the fun learning playing. And we thought, well, maybe we can play some other people. And so we started looking for other women to play against, and it was not easy.
So this is the moms creating their own soccer teams.
Well, this is David was teaching us the sport
The
on
moms.
the moms on a fun basis, and he just lit a fire in all of us. As at that time, my husband used to say, David trolls Mill Valley with a soccer ball. Because if he met you, anyone with their kids, would you like to learn to play soccer? And he single-handedly taught, I don't know how many people he's taught
So was
soccer
he
to.
teaching your children at that point,
No, he
and
was
then
teaching women. He
he was
just
teaching women, but he did
he
start the
also
program for
at
the
the same
children.
time, he's having clinics and teaching children.
Yes.
It was his life. He did soccer and music. He played the guitar, and
Right.
he did the two loves of his life, and that's what he did. And managed to make a living at it. And it was really been a blessing for the town. All the and Mill Valley Soccer Club, I think a fellow named Dick Swain and David really started that, and it's everyone knows that almost every kid in town plays soccer.
And this is what year again, when you and the moms are in your learning phase? This is in the early 70s, did you say?
This around 1976 or seven, yeah.
So the moms are now playing soccer
The
and the
moms
kids
are.
are going to soccer camp.
Yes, it was amazing. On a Saturday, suddenly you just see all the soccer shirts, because they came up with the idea of reversible shirts, blue on one side and red on the other, and you just switch your shirt when you got to the games. The beauty of it, a lot of the things that we hadn't been exposed to before really did come about because of Title IX in 1972, where there was this recognition that women were athletes too and needed the same opportunities, space on the field, all the subtle things. It's like, oh, go ahead, you can play, but you need a field and you need someone to teach you how to do it and you need support. Suddenly, the recognition that girls can and should have the opportunities. And it was very clear that David Frommer, it was just natural, seemed natural to him that boys and girls should learn and it should all, they should play together and do what they wanted to do. So early on, there was an opportunity they could play on an all-girls team or they could play co-ed if they wanted to. And the tone was set, and it was a very beautiful way that it all started. So at the time that the women were learning to play soccer, our kids were learning, and that's one of the spin-offs of something like a Title IX. You don't realize the subtle things, how it's like a pebble in the water, it spreads out. So some of us started coaching. So suddenly you have a pool of people that are learning soccer that can then teach their daughters and sons. So you're suddenly more people are involved in the community and in the club, and it grows and everybody benefits. And you do not necessarily think about it at the time of why this is, but consciousness is raised and floats all boats. And that was what happened. It was quite exciting. So we, in order to learn more, and there was more interest now in the parents, so we started pickup games where we would meet, and there'd be men and women would meet at hockey park, and you'd show up, or I think it was Monday and Wednesday night, bring a couple of cones, put them up for goals, and throw out the ball. And the adults were all playing, as well as some of the older kids. So it
And were
became
the little kids on the sideline rooting?
sometimes, or mostly they'd be playing. They'd be playing at the playground. But it was a nice event, and we called it family soccer. So more and more people were learning. And we developed appreciation for different styles of soccer because pretty soon it was known that there were these pickup games in Mill Valley. People from other countries that happened to be living here would come. People from Latin America, people from Europe, and we began to see the styles and appreciate them. The Latin Americans tend to love the beauty of the solo guy and the ball dribbling through and doing great stuff. And then the European style was more rigid and formal and seemed to us to have more rules. And yet it all worked and it all mixed in. And here are the women learning, and it was raising our skill level. Obviously, we were way over our head on skill because they've been playing all their lives. But they were very happy to all have an opportunity to play. So it was a great time.
What a community builder.
It was. And it obviously grows, as I was saying, because then you're meeting new people from other countries and meeting on a common level of interest and appreciate them. It was one fellow from Iran, I remember joining us. But it was interesting at the time, he said he was from Persia. He said, I always tell people I'm from Persia because Americans think, oh, that's okay, but they have a lot of negative attitudes about Iran. But anyway, you learn quickly, don't you?
So that was basically that time was the birth of soccer in Mill Valley on a lot of levels, not just for the kids, because for many people know Dave Frommer soccer, and our children have grown up with soccer and select soccer, and
That's
And this
right.
very, very strongly entrenched sports in our community. I mean, it's just like a rite of passage.
That's right. Well, it goes back to David and the founders of the Mill Valley Soccer Club, and the United States in general, soccer was starting to grow.
So the Title IX, that's a watershed moment where suddenly it's why not women? Of course, women, and then things start to shift.
Federal programs, if you had federal funding, then you had to have opportunities for women in education and in athletic opportunities. And a lot of people weren't excited about that because they saw that in colleges as taking away from the men's programs, taking money away from it. And there were many, many challenges to it. And I'm certainly not an expert on that, but I have read that for some years there were different court cases saying how much money, how much support do you have to have a team if there's not the interest? There were a lot of things to figure. But in Mill Valley, it just seemed to proceed. I don't have the details of the gal who was the story of a young woman who was the first girl to play on Little League. And that's a great story.
And
But
here in Mill Valley,
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
this was women's lib is
Yes, yeah, it's the women's movement, which was all, that's a whole other story, but I remember when I was actually had returned to college in Hawaii, I struck out and put my maiden name in my name. It was, when I think of it, it's so funny, but at the time it seemed kind of daring. So I became Jill Gavin Young.
Well, what year were you born, if you don't mind me asking?
1941.
So this gives us context of to where you were at these changes in your life.
It was a more traditional time when I grew up, and my parents said, "Well, why would you go to college? You just get married and not use it." But fortunately, I said, "Well, I want to go," and they supported it, and that and we didn't really argue about it. But from their point of view, it seemed odd. I'm trying to think. I think I was my cousin and I were the first two girls to go to college
In your family.
in our, of my relatives.
So now we're in our 70, in the 70s here, and Mill Valley's is got pickup games, soccer pickup games at Hockey Park. People are coming together for these pickup games. You've got the youth are Dave Frommer's off and running with his youth program. And the moms are playing together, and now the dads are coming in, so you have mixed games. So, did you have after game events or barbecues or those
Not
kinds of things?
really. No, it was play till dark and go home. And we'd start. I think we started around 6 when people were off work and they'd show up. It was very informal, and you didn't choose sides. You just whatever side was short till they were even. And
Did you make lasting friendships from that time?
yes. Because some of the moms, and then later single women, wanted more competition, so we began to form a team, and we looked for people to play, and we found there were some women in Fairfax who also were looking at this time, were learning how to play, and we had a pickup game at Tam High. And I think David was our coach at that time, very fledgling. And we must have looked terrible because we had never had a real game before on a field. And it was a lot of fun. And some of the gals from Fairfax and some of the women from the original group formed a team. Some of the gals didn't want to be playing in a team. So we couldn't find other teams. There were no other teams in Marin, so we called ourselves Mill Valley United, and we joined the Golden Gate Women's Soccer League in San Francisco Bay Area. we found out that there were teams in San Francisco and in the East Bay. So we traveled around. I don't remember how long the season was, but we had cards with our name on it, and we had to present our passes when we got to the referee, when we got to the games. And we had a great time. We met some gals in Berkeley, and we practiced for a time over in Berkeley. It was all very new to us. We played on the polo fields, at Golden Gate Park, and different places in the East Bay.
What was your position?
Left half.
Left half.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, you're describing an athletically inclined woman here. You definitely your hockey, then to soccer, and then. But I understand that you also participated in some other activities.
It was, strangely enough, it was again teaching mothers. I got involved with rowing on a crew team in Greenbrae, known today as Marin Rowing Association. Once again, a friend of mine from Mill Valley, actually Sue Johnson, Huey's wife, around 1985 or 6, said, "I'm rowing. Would you like to come and learn?" The mothers of the Redwood High boys and girls have asked a women's coach to teach us, and we're learning to row. And I said, "Well, yes, you know, I had seen that. Never thought I could ever be able to do this wonderful thing." And in the small town in Canada, you don't have boathouses with, you know, 58-foot long shells. So the mothers started out with a coach called Jana Bartow, and she went through college and was on the road for Cal. She was a stroke and an excellent and wonderful rower, and she started the girls' high school program at Redwood High. At the beginning of rowing, all the rowing came out of Redwood High. Later, other high schools became involved, and now they come from all the different schools. But the boys' program had started there in 1968, but it wasn't until 1977 that Jana started the girls' program.
How do you spell her last name?
Barto.
Okay.
Jana, Jana.
Okay.
And she unfortunately passed away in 2003 as a fairly young woman of breast cancer. So that was quite a tragic thing. But she coached the first women's league, and once again, I don't know what it is about sports, but you start out doing it for fun, and then you want to race somebody or play somebody. So we started competing, and we formed an eight, and we went to San Diego Crew Classic, and we won a gold medal down there.
Wow.
And our eyes were as big as saucers, because we had never really had a real race with anybody. And she'd done a good job.
And what was the age range of the rowers?
At that point, everyone was probably from maybe 42 to 50, around in there. The master starts over 35, so you had to be over. But you could be as old as you wanted to be. You just couldn't be younger. So at that time, we had just the 1-8. And so I was fortunate that I was the number three seat in that boat. But as the program grew, we got better rowers, because the college girls were now getting older, and they started coming into our program because they were becoming 36.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up, I wrote until 1995, but I was ended up in the B boat, because it's strictly who's the fastest,
mm-hmm.
who can move the boat the fastest,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a miraculous thing. Rowing is almost, it's not quite like ballet, but something like that. The beauty of it, the way you move in the water, the way you move your body, the way the oars come in unison. And in the early morning, and we would row maybe 6:30 in the morning with, you can imagine going down Corte Madera Creek, and as you go out to the water, you're seeing Mount Tam.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite special.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of history, but a lot of the history of rowing is, excuse me, with men.
Mm-hmm.
The storied past that we start to learn about, there were not a lot of women in crew before those days. And then we found there was a Martha's Moms. Same thing. Martha was someone who rowed, and she taught her mom and other moms up in Seattle. So Martha's Moms came down to San Diego. So I think there was a lot of that going on.
Wow.
Once the women got into it, women got a chance to.
There's a few Mill Valley women, but it's a Marin rowing.
It was Marin rowing. Mm-hmm. Sue Johnson and I were the only two women. And Sue, she was always a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marin Rowing Association itself, the Better Rowers rowed, and in head of the Charles in Boston, and they've had a very storied history of medals in fours and eights and pairs. They all far beyond the level that I was able to achieve.
Did you ever imagine you'd ever be in any level of rowing?
No, I did not. Well, other than a canoe and a rowboat in Canada as a child. It was wonderful to have the horizons lifted like that. Now, my daughter she's quite short. Shouldn't say that. She's about 5'2".
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Amy. So they looked at her and said, oh, coxswain. And she didn't want to be a coxswain. She wanted to row. And she had the ability, but just a little too undersized.
With your long limbs.
Yes, that wasn't it. And it was quite a remarkable thing and a miracle, really, that as in our 30s and 40s, we were able to take part in these things that we thought we'd missed out on or never dreamed we could do.
When you were younger, did you bemoan the fact that you weren't entitled to do these kinds of things, or did you simply just accept the status
quo? I don't think I thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I thought about what I could do,
mm-hmm.
and did the things that were available. I could remember being slightly irritated that the basketball team had to play at the most inconvenient time in the gym, that the boys always got the best times. But I didn't think about it too much. But when I look back over it, I realized that it was pretty constant. Like, we got the leftovers, the leftover time, the leftover equipment. But mm-hmm. I wasn't one to really dwell on it. I was just happy to do what I could,
and
I shook it off.
Opportunity as something came up, you were quick to just adaptable to jump into some of these new opportunities as well.
Yeah.
So you're describing yourself, you know, very much a team player and enjoying that kind of community. And how does that translate to you living here in Mill Valley, that mindset?
I've always, as you say, enjoyed group things. And as I got older, I would look for things to do in the community. And I like the idea of Bloomathon. They started in 1984, and I did not become involved till around 1998. It was a simple premise, which is people donated small sums of money. The group bought plants, and we put them in,
Beautified the city.
beautified the city, put flowers and trees around town. Our symbol were the daffodils, and thousands of daffodils were planted. And volunteer days were held twice a year, so our core group would be there organizing, but other mothers and fathers and children would come and put in the annuals and the daffodil bulbs in the usually May and October approximately. And it included trees along Miller Avenue, kind of where the old KFC was, along in that stretch, daffodils along Miller, and everywhere along Miller, Lytton Square, and then with the new community center around the flagpole and in the back. And then
And
that.
do you collaborate with the city regarding that planting?
We are under the auspices of Parks and Rec, and we really couldn't have operated without them and their support. They absolutely helped us, encouraged us, and they. At the beginning, we had to really dig into some really awful soil, and it was extremely difficult. And then over the years, the crew there would help prepare soil for us and made it possible for the volunteers to, made it a lot easier. And they just helped with everything.
Do you think the city would have been as blooming without Bloomathon? Would the city have picked up? I mean, do you think it's made a difference visually?
Yes, I do think it's made a difference. There's not a lot of park workers, and they can only do so much. And that's the beauty of volunteers, is that they can provide extra, stretch the funds, stretch the resources. You can't expect a small crew of city workers to take care of all of the parks and be going around and weeding and working on flower beds. It's not realistic. So I think it's a good team effort.
And do you engage the youth in the area, of Mill Valley, with your Bloomathon? Do you work with the schools?
Do we
Have
in
you worked with the schools? And in what way have you embodied the larger Mill Valley population?
the Children came to often to planting days, not a lot with the schools, other than we donated daffodils to them so they could plant them around the schools.
Nice. So you are you've been on the vanguard of sports and flowers and changing the city in subtle yet ubiquitous ways.
I think I was fortunate to be part of what was going on, and I jumped in. Didn't really create it, other than I saw there was an opportunity and I joined.
Very, very interesting. Well, before we close this interview, I want to ask you one last question. This is always my last question. And I would urge you to think about your experience with Mill Valley and the life that you've lived here, and what you might say to somebody who's listening to this. Is there any question that I haven't asked you that you wish I had asked you? Is there anything we haven't talked about that you wished we had?
I think one thing that perhaps is typical of all places is that people say, "Oh, Mill Valley has changed so much. Woe is me." The people are different. They just aren't the same. And I really don't find that to be true. I think what the people today do is different. I think their lives are more pressured, and I think they're working harder. And I think the lives of the parents and the children are pretty structured and so on. And maybe it's they don't have the time they used to have. But I continue to meet people of all ages that really love this town and that continue to support it, maybe in different ways, maybe financially. Maybe they don't have the time, but they do support it financially. And I continue to love the town and the people I meet and the environment. It's a real privilege to live here.
Okay. Well, I think that does it for us then. Thanks very much, Jill.
Very
for your
welcome.
Time and for your stories.
It's always wonderful to talk about the town I love.